I'm Liam Edwards. This is number 0421, the Stuff File Program, with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0421. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, you'll meet Ava Kaufman, a heart transplant recipient herself, who is the founder of the nonprofit organization Ava's Heart. They have a big gala coming up in L.A.
Last year, we had our first Ava's Heart Heroes Ball. I decided to honor those people that have helped myself and the foundation. It's really about people in the world of transplant and doctors and medical device companies and pharmaceutical companies that have helped us along the way. This year, we are honoring two amazing doctors, Dr. Robert Shaman and Dr. David Ross from UCLA, one heart surgeon and one lung doctor.
Dr. John Huber is back on the program to talk about a recent study looking at the link between good friends in adolescence and mental health later on in life.
There is hope. I actually do some chaperoning of some high school events for choir and band and stuff like that. And it's really interesting to see these kids. They're little superstars in and of themselves, and they don't ever see that because who gets to be the center of attention? The head cheerleader, the quarterback, all that kind of stuff. And I think this supports that idea that, you know, you're a well-rounded individual. Your life is just beginning. It's not the glory days you're going to be looking at.
Stuart Nullman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and Book Banter hits the road with comedian Todd Barry with Thank You for Coming to Hattiesburg. So pack your bags with jokes and one-liners. We depart soon on the Stuff File Program.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0421, was 7-year-old Liam Edwards from Kingston, Jamaica. Thank you very much, Liam, for doing the guest late on this edition of the Stuff File Program, a program that is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Now, talk about a crappy ending to a date. A British woman became lodged in a window after attempting to retrieve feces she attempted to throw out in a first date that went completely down the toilet. Or didn't, I guess. The BBC reports Bristol, England student Liam Smith recently went on a first date set up through Tinder. After a night of wining and dining, the pair decided to go back to Smith's apartment to watch a movie. That's when things went poopy. While using the bathroom, Smith's unnamed date couldn't flush the toilet. Panicking, the woman reached into the bowl, grabbed her waist, wrapped it in toilet paper, and threw it out the window. The embarrassed woman, an amateur gymnast reportedly, aimed her feces to land in a garden below. However, the fecal matter became wedged between non-opening panes of glass instead. Climbing headfirst to retrieve the brown nugget, the woman became stuck. "It was into this twilight zone that my date had thrown her poo," Smith told the BBC. "I started to grow concerned, so I called the fire brigade, and once they had composed themselves, they set to work removing her from the window." Firefighters smashed the window and rescued the trapped woman. The cost to replace the window is about $470, more than what Smith's monthly budget as a university student would allow. Smith set up a GoFundMe account to help pay for the window. With a $318 goal, more than $4,100 was raised in 2 days, 10 times the amount he originally set. A small portion of the money will be used to replace the window, while the remaining will be donated to 2 charities, Smith noted. As for his Tinder date, the two did go on a second date, according to the Bristol Post. Smith and the woman met up for drinks to discuss the GoFundMe page. She's a lovely girl. I'm not sure what's going to happen. I'm really busy with my dissertation at the moment, but I'd certainly be open to seeing her again, Smith told the Post. I have high hopes for these two. I mean, just think of the story they'll be able to share years from now with their grandchildren. Yeah. A van from the Thurston County, Washington coroner's office headed to the morgue after picking up a body and had a minor mishap as it drove through the streets of Olympia. The back came open and two gurneys rolled out onto the street. Two police officers happened to be nearby and secured the rolling beds. The one with the body strapped on it was fine, they said, with no trauma to the corpse, even though it had come to rest in the middle of an intersection. They called the coroner's office to come back for the cots, since the driver apparently didn't notice his cargo was no longer there. Asked to comment, Coroner Gary Warnock said, "The van will be tested and checked to see if there was a mechanical failure." You know, I think checking and testing the driver is more likely to reveal the failure in this particular case. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, and still with indignities to dead bodies, five nurses at Denver Health Medical Center were suspended for 3 days after they inappropriately viewed a deceased patient's body and talked about it. The nurses admired the size of the deceased patient's genitals and at one point opened a body bag to view parts of the body. A different nurse heard one of the disciplined nurses make a comment that the nurse felt was inappropriate and reported it to hospital staff. According to a Denver police report, multiple staff members viewed the victim while he was incapacitated, including after he was deceased. Denver police responded to the incident but say the decision was made to have Denver Health Medical Center handle the issue internally. The Denver District Attorney's Office determined that there was insufficient evidence to prove a crime was committed and no charges were filed. A spokesman said he could not provide the names of the nurses involved, and it was not reported exactly how big the body part was. Well, I guess everybody needs a hobby, huh? Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Ava Kaufman runs a foundation that is close to her heart, literally. It's called Ava's Heart. It's a nonprofit with a mission to bring awareness to the problems and difficulties transplant patients face pre- and post-transplant and how a transplant not only affects the recipient, but the entire family. Ava herself is the beneficiary of a donor heart. Ava joins us on the line right now from California to talk about her organization and also a fundraising gala event that's coming up. Hi, Ava.
Hi. Thank you for having me on your show. I'm so excited.
Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, you, as I said, went through this yourself. You received a heart transplant. Now, a lot of people, when they go through whatever it is they go through in life, take it in stride and do what they have to do. But you went one step beyond. You started this foundation. Tell us about how this foundation came to be.
Okay, well, I was a perfectly healthy, you know, mother, wife, woman who was in great shape and had a really good life. And I developed a rash on my hand, which went misdiagnosed basically for 3 months. And I ended up dead at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center with a VADA pump and an ECMO machine because I had had a disease called dermatomyositis. It's an autoimmune disease that destroys your muscles. And because I was in such good shape and because my doctor never took a blood test, the disease destroyed all of my muscles in a very short period of time. And they weren't going to put me on the transplant list because they'd never seen this disease destroy a heart before and because they didn't think I would survive it. And I was fortunate enough to be at a hospital at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center where they decided to list me as an experiment, which they did, and I received a heart in 10 days on my real birthday. During that period of time, I had been in the middle of a divorce and I lost everything. And I was ready to let go one evening because I couldn't move. I couldn't do anything and I was intubated. And I I couldn't live like that anymore, and I really didn't believe I was going to get better. And then I felt my daughter pulling me back. I had an 11-year-old daughter, and long story short, I kind of made a deal with God that evening that if I could get back to being my daughter's mother again, I would spend the rest of my life giving back. I didn't exactly know what that would be. So it took me a long time to recover, not from the transplant, but from the disease, because I had to learn how to do everything again, you know, walk, fold laundry, do everything. And I started volunteering at Cedars and saw the incredible need between, you know, people that, you know, were financially in good shape and people that weren't, that needed transplants. And many people weren't able to get listed because they couldn't afford the 3 months of post-transplant housing near their transplant center. And so I started doing research, and believe it or not, I came upon the David Foster Foundation, which is a Canadian foundation, a huge foundation that helps every transplant patient under the age of 18 with anything they need, whether they need to be flown to a proper transplant center, or they need food, or they need their rent paid, or they need a computer for school, or whatever. And so I decided that that's what I was going to do with the rest of my life. And so I started Ava's Heart. And fortunately, we were able to partner with a family foundation here called Change a Life, and I began helping families. And that's kind of how it all started.
So what exactly, your organization, Ava's Heart, as you say, helps families. What's the most important thing that they need going through something like this? What's the first thing your organization helps them with?
If they need post-transplant housing to get listed for a heart, you know, because we're so small, you know, we're 5 years old, and, you know, I started this with nothing, so... But we're growing and people are coming on board with post-transplant housing, you know, because Southern California has two of the best transplant centers in the world, really, UCLA and Cedars. And Keck is kind of right behind them. But people come from all over the United States, all over the world to Cedars and UCLA because they have certain treatments that other centers don't have. And for some reason... although Ava's Heart helps all transplant patients, California gets hearts faster than any other place. Like, we have people from New York that are sent here because they don't believe they'll be able to wait long enough in New York. So, you know, there's no housing. And I believe that, you know, when you're told that you need 3 months of post-transplant care, you know, there needs to be a place for you to be able to stay where you feel safe. You know, you need a caregiver where your family can come. So that's the number one need at the moment.
Now, as I mentioned, there is an event coming up. You have a gala coming up. It's the second annual Ava's Heart Foundation. Tell us about the gala and what will be taking place there.
Well, last year we had our first Ava's Heart Heroes Ball. I decided to honor those people that have helped, you know, myself and the foundation. And so it's really about people in the world of transplant and, you know, doctors and medical device companies and pharmaceutical companies that have helped us along the way. And so this year we are honoring two amazing doctors, Dr. Robert Shaman and Dr. David Ross from UCLA, one heart surgeon and one lung doctor. And then we're honoring Carla Gordy Bristol of Motown fame. Carla happens to be on my board and is such an advocate for what we're doing and has come on many shows with me and really saved us last year on the red carpet. She does our red carpet, so she's doing it again this year. And then we're honoring CareDx, which is a company that is totally dedicated to helping all transplants, and they came up with this AlloMap test, which is a blood test that you can get instead of getting a heart biopsy, which isn't very much fun. And then Syncardia, which is a company that makes the total artificial heart, and then best of all, really Donate Life, and we're honoring the donor families. And we're also going to be announcing that this year, with a partnership with One Legacy Foundation, we will be also assisting donor families. We have found that many donor families, you know, whose loved ones have saved so many lives, don't even have the funds to bury them. So we're very excited about announcing that as well.
The MC is a friend of this program, a longtime friend of this program. Steve Rohr is going to be the MC of your event.
Yes, he is. Steve's the MC. Vincent Patterson of Madonna and Michael Jackson fame is directing it. We have the Jacob Jonas Dance Company performing, Tommy Koster on keyboards, Maria Howell singing, Jolie Fisher, Maria Hayden, Christy Ferris doing monologues. It's going to be a really entertaining night. I come from the world of theater. I was a professional dancer, so I'm so about the flow of everything and feel so blessed to have Vincent on board to have put it all together. So it's going to be an incredible night. I hope we raise a lot of money. And I just want to thank Richard Lightstone, my board chair, who's also from Montreal, for being such an amazing partner in all of this.
Now, the event is taking place on September 14th.
Yes.
Obviously, a lot of people listening to this won't have an opportunity to be there or see this, but there's still the opportunity for anyone who is listening to this to donate and be able to help Ava's Heart Foundation. So how can they go about doing that?
You can go to the website and make a donation. There's a place where it says Give Now. You can also text the word heart to 41444, and the money comes directly to us, and all of those funds are used to help transplant patients and their families. You know, even a $10 or $100 donation helps because it all adds up. I mean, sometimes we've helped people just with food and gas cards. I mean, mothers, you know, who live too far away to come visit their babies, you know, because they can't afford the gas and have nowhere to stay. And so, I mean, there are just so many things that you don't even think about, you know, until your life's been touched by transplant. But it's the most amazing gift. And I just want to also thank my donor family and all the donor families out there, because without their love and their family's understanding of all of this, you know, I wouldn't be here.
Yes, you have the heart of a, you received the heart of a 17-year-old, right?
Yes.
That's, what was it like when you got in contact or the family reached out to you?
I haven't met the family. So many times the family doesn't choose to meet you, so that's okay. I thank them every day, and I've reached out and thanked them. And, you know, one day if they feel like it, it would be wonderful. If not, you know, they're in my thoughts and prayers every day.
Again, you say people can text the word heart to 41444, or they can go to your website, which is avasheart.org, correct?
Yes, and on the homepage, we do have a kind of a video clip of the event that we did last year, and we promised to have one this year as well. So, you know, you can kind of feel like you're there.
Ava, congratulations on all the work that you have done and are doing, and I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us, and I certainly will say to you, great health in the future.
Thank you so, so much. I really appreciate you giving me the time. It was great.
Ava Kaufman, the founder of the nonprofit Ava's Heart. For more information or to donate, you can go to their website at avasheart.org. You can also donate on your phone by texting the word heart to 41444. That's heart at 41444. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're experiencing the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Sit back, relax,
Let it rattle around between your ears, tickling your cerebellum. And enjoy.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to Dr. John Huber about the correlation between making good friends in adolescence and mental health later in life. Plus, Stuart Nullman is in with another edition of Book Banter, and we also have an Idiot of the Day coming your way, so stick around for that. And lots more Stuff File news as well here on a program that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our radio success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, a woman offered her breast milk to fellow attendees at Burning Man for lattes and hangover cures. Mickey Agrawal showed photos of herself pumping breast milk while walking around the festival to share with other guests. "I pumped my breast milk every 3 hours at Burning Man and gave away most of my milk," she wrote. "Some people downed a whole 4 ounces hoping for a hangover cure. Some wanted it for their coffee to make lattes." Mickey estimated that about 30 to 40 people tried her breast milk, and she gave a bag to a coffee camp. They had regular, soy, and breast milk as the options, she said. Mickey tried some herself, noting it tasted like sweet coconut milk, but said the experience helped her notice a lack of awareness about motherhood. Mickey added that she believes it's time to have a greater conversation about why people find it uncomfortable to discuss breast pumping. Well, you know, Mickey, I have no problem discussing breast pumping at all. I do have an issue of total strangers offering up their breast milk for your lattes. That's a little odd. But, you know, whatever floats your boat. Like I said earlier, everybody has to have a hobby. Anyway, a team of investigators from Bigfoot 911 says they spotted the elusive creature in McDowell County, North Carolina. John Bruner says at around 11 p.m., the team was putting glow sticks in a rural forest on the theory that they spark curiosity in the beasts, when he suddenly saw one of the glow sticks moving, no doubt carried off by a Bigfoot. He turned on the light and saw a large bipedal animal covered in hair, he claims. "I was able to see details of the creature," he says, "like the face, and the hair was matted and stringy. The eyes were farther apart than human eyes. It quickly ran off, not to be seen again." The Greensville, South Carolina Police Department weighed in on the report. "After watching this video, I think we can say with some confidence that proof of Bigfoot still eludes us." And the department urged, "If anyone sees a Bigfoot, please don't shoot it, as you'll most likely be wounding a fun-loving and well-intentioned person sweating in a gorilla costume." Yeah, I have to agree with the cops on this one. You know, in a country that has more cameras than people, how come there are still no clear Bigfoot photos? Ever wonder about that? Yeah. Okay, you be the judge of this next story. I'm still on the fence about how this turned out. 37-year-old Sean Donis of New Jersey said that his wife Nancy asked him to take care of their son, now 5, while she went out for dinner with friends in Elizabeth. While watching his son, Donis was looking for his son's iPad. He activated the Find My iPhone app on the iPad, and he realized that it had traveled across Rockland County, New York. Donis decided to travel to the location, as he had suspected Nancy was cheating, and he wanted to catch her red-handed. Donis drove to the home of his wife's boss and found her vehicle parked in his driveway. The heartbroken husband walked into the home through an unlocked door and went to the upstairs bedroom. There, he found his wife naked in bed with her boss. Nancy jumped out of the bed while her boss ordered Donis out of his home. He left armed with his 35-second video proof of her cheating. Nancy subsequently filed for divorce, and the couple's 6-year marriage ended back in February. Recently, Donis was notified that he was indicted by a grand jury on charges of unlawful surveillance and felony burglary over the cheating incident. He pleaded guilty in August, but is due in front of the court again on September the 20th. So let me get this straight. He catches his wife cheating, she files for divorce, and he gets indicted. I wonder if he's going to lose custody of his son, too. You know, justice is blind, but it isn't always fair. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Flint, Michigan police launched an investigation after a councilman reported that a pawn shop near City Hall had a city-owned laptop on its shelf. It was issued to First Ward Councilman Eric Mays, who called the charge a political allegation, but the investigation resulted in the misdemeanor charges after police say Mays had pawned the laptop not once, not twice, not three times, but let's go higher. He pawned it 9 times, and he bought it back 8 of those times. Mays would neither confirm nor deny the charges. "I will say, where is the laptop safer?" Mays told a reporter. "There or City Hall? City Hall has had break-ins. Other than that, I have no further comment." He did continue to comment, however, because apparently he just couldn't shut up in a situation like this. "I don't think it's criminal," Mays said. "It just shows I'm poor." Yeah, it also shows you're kind of shady, pal. I'm just saying. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? According to a recent study, people who have a few close friends in their teen years, as opposed to having many friends but fewer close relationships, benefit long term. If you have a small but tight-knit friend group when you're 15, researchers found that when you're 25, you're more likely to have more self-worth and fewer mental health symptoms like anxiety and depression. To talk about this, we are joined once again by clinical forensic psychologist Dr. John Huber. He's the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health, which is a nonprofit organization, and he joins us right now on the line from Texas. Hi, John.
Hi, Peter. Thank you for having me on again today.
A pleasure to have you back on. I was reading the study, and I got some questions about it. I'm not sure if I necessarily agree with it. First of all, where do you stand on this particular study?
Well, you know, when I look at this stuff, you know, there's some case, and you know, I know that I have cases where it's proven to be true. There's some problems with the study, though, that I have. First of all, it's such a narrow, wide range, 15 to 25, you know, and that's just a 10-year kind of longitudinal study. It doesn't take into effect. I mean, you know, this has been on for a decade. They did this research. Well, the last decade, our world has changed. I mean, cell phones are, you know, the way we see them today, smartphones started in 2007. They're 10 years old. And we know how that's changed our idea and concept of friends. So I think there's a whole lot of, I mean, this was probably more accurate 15 years ago, this data, than it is today.
Well, that was one of the points I was going to bring up, the fact that social media has changed the world as far as so-called friendships are concerned. The other thing, as you said, it's over a 10-year period. They had 169 adolescents. They were racially, ethnically, and socioeconomically diverse, which is a good thing, and they came from medium families as far as income was concerned, so that's a good base there. But there's one thing I didn't find in the study, which I think you have to take into consideration, whether the people they studied were single children, only children, or came from a house of siblings.
Or came from single-parent family. I didn't see that there.
Or came from single-parent family.
Middle class.
Exactly. And I think that would skewer the situation, too, given those parameters, which are not included, at least from what I read in the study.
I agree completely. And, you know, it's kind of like we talk about with our grad students about dissertations, where I say they're incomplete works. And the whole idea is you need to be able to talk about what it's missing and what should be done in the future if you're going to continue this research. And, you know, this wasn't, I'm sure, the whole, you know, there was probably that discussion. They just didn't choose to share it with everybody else. Because it doesn't really make for good reading in you know, ABC News online. You know,
okay. So basically, since we've now already talked about what we see are some of the flaws of the studies, what can you take away from the study that you deem to be a positive aspect?
Well, some of the positive aspects are, you know, for people who feel like they're always sitting on the sidelines when they're in high school, you know, they had their close-knit group of friends, and everybody else seemed to be in the spotlight.
you know, there is hope. There is a life for you after high school. I think that's important. And, you know, I actually do some chaperoning of some high school events for choir and band and stuff like that. My kids are involved in, and it's really interesting to see these kids, and, you know, they're little superstars in and of themselves, and they don't ever see that, because who gets to be the center of attention? The head cheerleader, the quarterback, all that kind of stuff. And I think this supports that idea that, you know, you're a well-rounded individual. Your life is just beginning. It's not the glory days you're going to be looking at, if you get my...
Absolutely. But the other side of the coin that I also see, as you just said, you know, your best days are ahead of you. It's been my experience, and I'm only going back to my own childhood, that when I look around at people that I know who were, again, the head cheerleader, the prom queen, the captain of the football team, that some of these people in high school, that was their peak.
You know, and you're right. It is for some of the people. In fact, I have looked for years for research to tell me approximately what percentage of those people that will that be their peak. Because a lot of them it's not, but a lot of them it is. And you know, I still talk with some of those guys from high school, and they peaked then. That was their glory days. And, you know, I don't want to put them down or anything else or make them feel less. Because I still like them, and they're fun to hang out with every once in a while, and you know, they've got families of their own. But I think that is something that we can share with those average students who are sitting on the side with their friends, that, you know, this might be all they ever do that is significant for them in their life.
So what about, again, the idea of friendships? Does it say anything about how you maintain those friendships? For instance, I know people who have no friends from the days when they were in school, and that just seems to be the kind of person that they are. They have great friendships now, but they don't go back to people they went to school with, or should I say the neighborhood they were in,
right.
Childhood friends. I'm someone who, quite frankly, I have most of my childhood friends. Some of them closer than others, but I don't know what that says about me or says about others, but does it make a difference whether you maintain those friendships through your lifetime?
You know, look at, for example, military brats who move, and they may be someplace for 6 months, and they're somewhere else for 18 months, and they're back to a year or the next time, and they're always having to remake friends. And being where I'm at, I'm between a whole bunch of military bases, so I get to see a lot of these people as they enter the hospitals later in life, and we talk about their experiences growing up and their friends. And it's really interesting. I've had couples that come in that met, like, when they were both in first grade on some military base in Guam, and then didn't run into each other again until, you know, they were in college at some point, and get married and have this amazing family and life. And, you know, when I get involved with them there, it's a twilight. And then I get people who, you know, none of their friends were military like them. They were able to generate the new friends wherever they went, but when they moved on geographically, the friendship didn't continue on after that.
The friends that one makes in those formative years, those formative preteen or tween or teen years, as opposed to friends you would make as an adult or even in college, even if the friendships from those formative years don't last, are they generally stronger relationships than what you could have later in life?
You know, friendships are an amazing thing, and you can develop super strong friendships at any point in your life. They don't have to be developed at that point. What we see, there are certain commonalities that predict the strength of the friendship. For example, if you both go through a trauma together or a trying time, for example, we can talk to World War II veterans who are in trenches together with people they'd never ever met before, but they had that one day experience and they're still communicating with them, you know, when they're 90 years old on their deathbed. that kind of an emotional bonding. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we take dates to scary movies, because it creates an artificial trauma that actually increases the likelihood that you're going to develop a stronger relationship with that individual.
Is it also not possible, though, that one of the things you have in a relationship that you start in your teens or earlier, as opposed to later as an adult, is that as an adult you have more responsibilities in your life? And when you think back at your friendships when you were teenagers, what you think about most that you seem to enjoy is a more carefree lifestyle that goes with just being that age, and therefore you romanticize about what your friendships were like at that time. You don't necessarily have that opportunity older in life.
You don't necessarily have that opportunity older in life, and that's why a lot of these teen-made friendships do last long, because they're able to, hey, we're planning on vacation in June next year. When are y'all going to do it? And you're able to go out and let go and be carefree for that time frame and with that individual who you used to do that with all the time. That is a perfect example of why those are solid, good relationships to be involved in, because it acts like a stimulus to allow you to let go of your stressors as an adult as well.
Bottom line, keep your friends close.
Keep your friends close. Don't be afraid to make new ones, because there's amazing people out there. And if you go back to what you were saying about not having the time and as an adult to make new friends, that also suggests that when you do make friends as an adult, that it's probably there's something there strong that's tying you together with that person, because you were able to make that friend even though you had all the stressors of an adult life.
Excellent advice as always. Thank you, John, for being on the program with us once again. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Dr. John Huber, Chairman for Mainstream Mental Health. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this show, which is number 0421, and you'll find links to John's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. People who have heard about our annual Wacky Warning Labels contest often ask us if there are certain kinds of labels we don't accept for our contest, even if they are funny. That's a really good question, and the answer is yes. There are many hilarious warnings that aren't necessarily common sense, so they're needed for consumer safety reasons. I'd like to tell you about one funny label we haven't used, and why. The warning comes on packaging for a pain reliever called PMS Mitol. Obviously, it's for women, but it warns, do not use if you have an enlarged prostate. Now let's be fair, you don't need to be a doctor to know that someone with PMS is not going to have a prostate. Kids, trust me. But the side effects of this medicine are not common knowledge, and there may be a man somewhere with a headache so bad he's willing to use PMS Mitol, so that warning needs to be there. If you have a funny, common sense warning that would be good for our contest, send it to us. Find out how you could be the next $1,000 grand prize winner at centerforamericatv.org.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands, just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And via some old-fashioned technology, a telephone, we have Stuart Nelman with us on Book Banter. Hi, Stu.
Hi, Peter. Hope the operator was very cooperative and cranked up the connection pretty well.
So what's it going to be next time, by the way? Telegraph?
Yes, we're going to do that. And the next time, I was hoping for carrier pigeons.
Okay, because I don't want to have to remember my dots and dashes for the next edition of Book Banter. What are we talking about this time?
Well, we're not going to be talking about communication. We're actually, speaking of going from one place to the other, we're going to talk about comedy. Well, Todd Barry in particular, because it's no bit secret that the life of a stand-up comedian is a solitary, lonely one. Basically, it's mostly that of a road warrior. They're traveling by aero road to cities and towns across North America, performing their opening or headlining set for the sheer purpose of making people laugh at their jokes and hopefully getting paid once their 45-minute or hour-long stage times are done. Now, veteran comedian Todd Barry knows what it's like to be a comedy road warrior. He's experienced his share of traveling from gig to gig in all types of venues and locales, large and small. So instead of dreading each stop along the road for his gigs, Barry has become a keen observer of what each stop had to offer him, not to mention some of the highlights and quirks that went along with it. And for his very first book, Barry has taken a year and a half's worth of comedy road stories and turned them into a rather interesting travelogue called Thank You for Coming to Hattiesburg. Now, the book starts on a grand scale, that is, with Todd being the opening act for a Louis C.K. show at Madison Square Garden, New York. Now, from there, he hits the road to embark upon a series of headlining gigs in medium-sized cities and towns across the U.S., including stops in Israel and Winnipeg. From Portland, Maine, to Roanoke Park, California, to, yes, even the city mentioned in the book's title, Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Now, however, with each entry about the places he performs at during this year-and-a-half comic odyssey, Barry rarely makes the show itself the emphasis of his observations. In fact, many times, the shows themselves play a rather secondary role. Instead, he chooses to focus on several non-show-related observations with each stop, including the quest for finding the perfect cup of coffee in the ideal coffee shop, or the conditions of his hotel room or venue dressing room, or the quirky tourist attractions that he happens to stumble upon.
By the way, is Israel to Winnipeg a direct flight?
Doubt it.
Okay.
I'm sure.
Just checking.
We had to fly via New York or some other major cosmopolitan center.
Okay, just checking.
Just checking?
Yeah.
No, I'm afraid not this time. But, there's plenty of interesting stories that Todd shares with the reader. Like, he recounts one of his favorite museum experiences following a gig in Wilmington, North Carolina, at the Cape Fear Serpentarium, which obviously there is a few snakes there. Then there's a time when he checked into his hotel room in Mulvane, Kansas, only to find that the toilet was left unflushed. But for his troubles, he got another room plus a $25 food voucher. And then there was a time when he performed in Missoula, Montana, in which his dressing room was nothing but a cramped, littered storage closet. And when he found out he couldn't even get a bottle of water, the promoter, quote-unquote, generously offered him a sip from the bottle that he was drinking out of.
Yikes.
Wow. Yeah. I hope he, sterilized the bottle before he took a sip from that, from that little drink. But Todd's dry, glib tone that he employs in the book somehow removes the sense of bitterness and dread that many comedians develop when encountering each circumstance while on the road. But somehow he views it with a sense of adventure and looks forward to every stop along the way so he can continue his quest for the perfect cup of coffee or discover a new restaurant before or after a performance. So Thank You for Coming to Hattiesburg is a fascinating book that gives a fresh perspective at the sometimes solitary world of a stand-up comic. And being a comedy road warrior is not always the glamorous part of the job of making people laugh on a regular basis. But Todd Barry demonstrates how he has earned his stripes on the road, which can be frustrating at times, but somehow he manages to find something that catches his interest and makes that time touring across the country not such a dreadful proposition after all.
And the book is?
Called Thank You for Coming to Hattiesburg by Todd Barry. It's published by Gallery Books, and it's $34.99.
And I'm guessing there's no shortage of books in this genre that you could recommend.
Oh, definitely not. But there's one collection of road stories, comedy road stories, that Rich Scheidner put together called I Killed. And if you really want to know some of the best and worst venues that comedians played at during their careers, know, on the road. This collection I killed is has everything, the good, the bad, and the very, very ugly. And sort of like makes you want to, you know, think twice, maybe if you really want to pursue that career in stand-up comedy. And quickly, for if you want a nice travelogue, outside of comedy, read Walk in the Woods by Bill Bryson, which he explores the Appalachian Trail from Maine all the way down south. Excellent travelogue. You'll appreciate the beauty of this part of Americana much better when you read this book.
I'm sure you'll you've come across in all these comedy books a series of less than flattering club names that people have performed in. I like the Chuckle Hut. The Chuckle Hut's one of my favorites.
My God. I mean, there's always a share of, you know, Last Stops and Coconuts and, you know, something with a banana in it. So, yeah, there's always those bizarre names. Sometimes these very, quote-unquote, original names that go to comedy clubs.
Yeah. So the book again is?
Thank You for Coming to Hattiesburg by Todd Barry. It's published by Gallery Books, and it's $34.99.
We're just about to get the flashing red light for you right now, so let's share with the audience where people can find you. And it's not—I'm guessing
well,
it's—I'm guessing it's
thank
not
you all
in
for coming, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. So before I leave, I just want to say you can catch me online at the at the Montreal Times, www.mpltimes.ca, or the old-fashioned way, in print every Saturday.
Wow, in print. Boy, we're on the phone and now we're in print. We're really stepping back. Cave drawings will be next on this program. Anyway,
well,
sir.
Before that, probably carved stone tablets.
Okay. Stuart Nolman, thanks once again. Stuart Nolman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Make sure you tip your waitress.
The Stuff File.
And we're just in the home stretch here on this edition of the Stuff File program. We still have a few Stuff File news stories to get to, and of course, an idiot of the day coming your way. But hey, I just want to offer up a subtle reminder at this moment that my new book, Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars, is available. Like the title says, within the pages you'll find some of my celebrity encounters with Oscar winners like Carl Malden and Cloris Leachman and Christopher Plummer. Emmy winners like Ed Asner, Michael Moriarty, and Lindsay Wagner. Tony winners like Carol Burnett and Julie Newmar. A host of TV icons like Buddy Ebsen, Bob Denver, Dick Van Patten, Gary Coleman, and more. Plus two guys who left their footprints up on the moon. Check it out. It's available on Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, as well as at my publisher's website at BearManorMedia.com. That's BearManorMedia.com. And you'll also find links to the book at our website at TheStuffFile.com. So buy the book. What are you waiting for? Huh? What? What? Anyway, back to the stuff. A school resource officer at Lexington Middle School in Lee County, Florida, caught a glimpse of something alarming on August 15th as he looked out at the second floor window toward the parent pickup lane. 39-year-old Christina Hester of Fort Myers was using her iPhone to cut and snort cocaine. After seeing Hester use a straw to inhale the substance, the SRO asked her to come inside the school. He retrieved her purse and found a half a gram of cocaine inside, and she was charged with possession of cocaine and drug paraphernalia. 12-year-old Spencer Yeager commented, "That's crazy. That's just so irresponsible, and they shouldn't be doing that." See? Even a 12-year-old knows it's wrong. So, what's 39-year-old Christina's excuse? Yeah. The California Highway Patrol says a driver plowed through a sign alongside the freeway near Aptos, went up an embankment, flipped, and ended up on its roof. It was 11:30 a.m., and 57-year-old Stephen DeWitt was quite intoxicated, an officer said, noting that he would have been killed had he not been wearing his seatbelt. As it was, DeWitt was helicoptered to a trauma center with serious injuries, and the sign that he plowed through, well, it read, "Report drunk drivers, call 911. Well, I'm guessing other drivers were probably afraid to with the new tougher laws against using phones while driving, but I digress. A woman in Louisville, Kentucky, called police to report a man in a public park had his pants down, watching her, exposing his genitals and making motions consistent with a sex act. Police caught up with 53-year-old Robert McCoy, who said he had a perfectly good explanation for what happened. He said he was peeing in the park and his pants accidentally fell down. Then he claims a groundhog startled him and he turned around, and that's how the woman possibly saw him. Yeah, okay. Police, who note McCoy is already a registered sex offender after an attempted rape, didn't buy the story. They arrested him on a charge of first-degree sexual abuse, a felony punishable by 1 to 5 years in prison. Seriously, a groundhog? How much ground could a groundhog ground if a groundhog could ground ground? Or in this case, how much time can a dumb schmuck get if he's too far untucked? Yeah. The Ford Motor Company has hired smell testers for its research labs in China, where consumers don't like the new car's smell that many Americans seek out. Ford calls the testers its golden noses, who sniff materials such as upholstery, steering wheels, and carpet. Testers are subjected to a stringent selection process and must not smoke or drink alcohol. In North America, says Andy Pan, supervisor for material engineering at a Ford facility in China, people want a new car smell and will even buy a new car smell spray to make older cars feel new and fresh. In China, it's the opposite. Wow. Can you just imagine the pride one feels when someone asks them what they do for a living and they get to say, "I smell new cars!" Yeah. A Massachusetts library is reminding residents that Chuck E. Cheese tokens are not an acceptable form of payment for overdue book fines. Peabody Institute Library in Danvers, Massachusetts, posted on Facebook that the library has had a surge of people attempting to pay fines and printing fees with tokens from Chuck E. Cheese and Bonkers, a Peabody amusement center. The library says the tokens are not legal tender and cannot be accepted. Bookkeeper Sue Contos tells the Salem News that she has counted 3 Chuck E. Cheese tokens in one day before realizing that they weren't real money. Chuck E. Cheese is a restaurant and entertainment center for kids featuring arcade and video games. The company has been phasing out the use of coins. Well, I guess in the interest of being pro-information here in Canada, I should go out on a limb on behalf of Canadian libraries and categorically state that libraries here are not accepting Canadian tire money either. There you go. Well, boys and girls, it's the time you've all been waiting for. Yes, you know it, you love it, you can't wait for it. It's time once again for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff off presents the Idiot of the Day.
A Hartford, Connecticut police officer leaving the police station after he got off duty at 2:15 a.m. was walking to his car in the parking lot when 2 men stopped him. They wanted to buy coke, they said. The officer agreed to sell them cocaine, but the men didn't have the $60 the officer quoted, so they popped over to an ATM to get the cash. The nearest ATM? In the lobby of the police station. Sure enough, that's where they went. And when they came back with the cash, Noah Yankowski and Zachary Pillarella, both 21, were arrested. Given their inexperience, said Deputy Chief Brian Foley, they are likely not addicts. Now, why, oh why, would you ask someone coming out of a police station if they have coke to sell? And why would you go into said police station to use the ATM to get the money for the transaction? Well, one reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0421. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0421. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check us out on Patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. If you were to play this episode backwards, go ahead, try and figure that out.